Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
You look very festive.
Thanks.
I'm in green with your red hair.
I got these really cute earrings for St. Patrick's Day, and I kind of couldn't wait to wear them. So they're really I will be donning cute. Them all weekend.
You look like you're straight out of Ireland right now.
Thank you.
The Irish people are probably like, the green thing is like so passe.
So over. Yeah, whatever. Whatever. But we in America, so it don't matter.
Yeah, that's right. You look great. So we're interviewing two people today that I'm really excited about because they're both going to be kind of touching on their own experiences, but then also the role of stem cells in cancer, which I have become convinced, just based off of what I've read and people we've talked to, is kind of the underlying issue in cancer care in terms of recurrence.
So interesting.
So yeah. I'm really thrilled that we're going to be talking to Jane McClellan today. She was given a terminal diagnosis with only a few weeks to live. And so Jane dug up research some decades old in her quest to survive. And rather than aiming to cure cancer, which, you know, in many cases is unachievable, that's what stage four patients are told, Jane's approach was to stop the cancer from growing. Remarkably, her approach not only stopped it growing, it disappeared altogether. So she is now cancer free after being stage four. So there are now clinics following her protocol and having some success. And she is the award-winning author of a book called How to Starve Cancer. And that's where she shares her story of terminal cancer to full recovery. And then she also shares kind of her unique cocktail of off-label drugs, which is drugs that are usually prescribed for other conditions, and supplements that effectively starve the cancer stem cell, which is the cell left behind by conventional treatment, which is why I'm really fascinated by her story. So first, we're going to talk about her diagnosis.
And then we're going to see how she took control of her own health with off-label drugs and supplements.
And finally, we're going to get her thoughts on chemo, cancer stem cells, and any words of encouragement she has for those listening.
But before we get to that, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Ann's Bra Shop features skilled mastectomy fitters ready to assist you in selecting the perfect breast forms, bras, swimsuits, and camisoles for your post-surgery needs. They have three locations in the St. Louis area, Chesterfield in Wentzville, Missouri, across the river in O'Fallon, Illinois, and a fourth location south on I-55 in Cape Girardeau. Visit Ann's Bra Shop at www.brashop.com to learn more. Well, welcome, Jane. Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, I want to dive right in. First of all, for people who are not familiar with your story or your experience, can you just tell us about your diagnosis, when you were diagnosed, with what? Kind of give us a synopsis.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if you followed me, you've heard me a million times.
Right.
But having said, you know, there are a lot of people, cancer unfortunately hits so many people. We have new people coming into the oncology field who are patients who know nothing about the whole minefield that is the whole traditional approach versus the metabolic approach, and which direction should you go? There's a massive battle raging, you know, but my approach is very much we should merge the two together. But anyway, I'll talk about my story, because I did the traditional stuff to start with because I didn't know any better. And I was first diagnosed in 94 with cervical cancer. So that's a very aggressive cancer. It was already stage three. So it had spread to my lymph nodes. It was pretty extensive. They did big operation, hysterectomy. I then had chemo radiotherapy following that. That obviously made me infertile, which to me back then, I was only 30 years old and I'd only just met my now husband. But the whole infertility thing at that age was just crushing for me. It was really crushing. And it wasn't just crushing for me as well. It was crushing for my family. And I think my mum took it really badly, and she didn't say very much. She very much kept all her problems to herself. And I think that's maybe what a lot of breast cancer patients do. They're very busy looking after other people and not really focusing on themselves. And sometimes I think that internalization of problems leads to cancer eventually. And I think she was grieving the loss of her grandchildren. Certainly I was grieving the loss of my own children at that point. You know, I never knew I was going to end up, well, A, staying alive, and B, having kids of my own, which I have. Thankfully, I have two lovely boys who were born eventually by surrogacy after many, many years, 10 years of trying. But anyway, so I'll get to that in a minute. But so 94, my first diagnosis, had traditional treatments, everything else. And then in 96, my mom ended up with stage 4 breast cancer. So this was a big, big factor in my journey, because it made me wake up, because I thought, well, I'm kind of like my mom in that I look after, you know, I like to look after other people. And I wasn't focused on myself at that point, apart from being devastated, totally devastated by the infertility. I was really, really depressed. But anyway, I focused on my mom at this point, tried to find things that would help her. At this point, I realized that changing your diet would make a difference, even though it was only slight, it might make a difference. Cutting out things like IGF and cutting out, you know, sugar, wheat, all that sort of stuff, I knew was important. So really low glycemic at this point. And we know that dairy is driven, so it has a quite high level of a protein called leucine. And this drives a metabolic process called mTOR. mTOR is something that happens in your muscles as well. It's sort of a protein that senses when to build and rebuild, et cetera. And it's a growth. It's kind of a growth signal. And so I tried to get her to stop dairy, tried to get her to lower her glucose intake and everything else. Of course, she was told by her oncologist that that was a waste of time. So she didn't do any of that. And then I tried to find lots of supplements and bits, but I tried all sorts of, you know, back then there was very little on the internet, very little at all. And I didn't know about complementary doctors, but I started to hunt around a little bit. And then she died quite quickly after her stage 4 diagnosis, within about 6 to 8 weeks or something. But anyway, I was.
So was her diagnosis before or after your own?
She had her first diagnosis. So she was diagnosed with, she called it her spotted bother. It's just a tiny bit and nothing for any of us to worry about. Okay. So she was diagnosed a few years before me. And then the only thing that they gave her back then was surgery. She never had any chemo, never had any radiotherapy. And I think that was an error. All right. And some people say, oh, you don't need all that. Well, actually, I think radiotherapy in particular, I think chemotherapy can cause problems. We know that chemotherapy in breast cancer can cause spread to the lungs. There are ways to stop that. I can talk to you about that quickly now if you want. So it's blocking things called MMPs. You don't need to know what they are, but there are certain factors, and I talk about them in my book. MMPs are sort of how to stop metastasis. Okay, this is the spread, and chemo, particular chemo, you know, certain regular used chemos for breast cancer cause the spread. They actually cause the spread by activating these MMPs. And they can block MMPs by having a cocktail of there are some old drugs, and there's some antiparasitics that work really well. So mebendazole and fenbendazole, which is used by a group of people. That's more of a veterinary thing. I tend to promote the mebendazole, which is a human use one. And that's an antiparasitic that you use for kids.
Interesting. Because I want to dive into like what you found for yourself and how you kind of came to these conclusions about using drugs off label and how you kind of got yourself from the point that you were at.
I try and look for the big picture. But anyway, so my journey then went from, so in 94, first diagnosis, my mum died in 96. Then in 99, it spread to my lungs. So I had pulmonary mets. I had a bit more surgery, and then I had chemotherapy again.
And how did it feel? Can I stop you? How did it feel when your cancer came back and you were told you were stage four? Because you talk a lot about women and internalizing those feelings and just always putting other people first. And I 100% agree with you. I think that I think that's why women are getting sick more and more, is because they do that.
Yeah.
So how did it feel for you?
Funny enough, I was so depressed by the infertility. It took my head off the infertility and focused me onto survival, which was something I hadn't really acknowledged, the fact that I was going to potentially die. That had kind of not, because the fertility was such a big thing in my head. It was massive. I had no other headspace for anything else.
Which brings up an interesting point, because when we're working with men and women, it's like emotional trauma is a big piece of their story. And it seems disregarded by the medical community. It's kind of an afterthought. But for you, I mean, think about that, that the infertility was a bigger trauma to you than the news that you had stage four cancer.
Yeah. So I think the grief combined, the original diagnosis and then, you know, being late, I was mucked about by the doctors on the NHS, and I was under the wrong doctor for sure. He let a whole load of women died who shouldn't have died. The screening was done incorrectly, and, you know, the follow-ups were done incorrectly. It was, the biopsies were done in the wrong places. Almost, you know, I think whether there was maybe some intention with that as well, but that's not okay. I won't go into that, but I just worry that the doctor was not.
Did you feel paralyzed by fear, or you, because you make it sound as though like you got this news and it really focused your attention on, okay, how am I going to live? And so you did conventional treatment again. At what point did you realize that wasn't working for you?
Well, I was already mixing in some other things at this point. By the time I got diagnosed with stage four, I'd already got this background information about other potential treatments and supplements and diet, and all of this was going on in my head. So I was thinking,
who brought that to you? Did you research that?
Me.
Did somebody bring it to you?
Me. And then I found some doctors in the UK who are brilliant. So my one of my key doctors was a chap called Dr. Calibou. Sadly, he died a couple of years ago, but he was brilliant. And he was very much into looking at the nutrition and everything else. I had another doctor called Dr. Kenyon, another doctor. So I was like, this is, the internet didn't really exist in the same way back then. I was picking the information out of the brains of these doctors. So I thought, the more doctors I can see and get information, the better. So there was another doctor, Patrick Kingsley as well, who I used to see up in Leicestershire. And, you know, he was brilliant. And he gave me, so I went up there for intravenous. I went, you know, it was a 2-hour journey to get up there, but I went up there 3 times a week for a while just to get intravenous vitamin C. And so I was doing that along, well, I kept my PIC line in, which is a line you have for the chemo. I said, I don't want to remove that. I want to keep that in. Thank you. And I'm going to have that in whilst I have some intravenous vitamin C. So they were all a bit, oh, well, that doesn't work. But anyway.
I want to dive into kind of like what you're talking about, which is marrying conventional treatment with these existing drugs and these supplements. And I want to kind of know, you know, how you arrived at that. But before we do that, do you want to do Boobs in the News?
Let's do it.
Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News!
All right, you ready for this?
Let's lay it on me.
All right, the name of the title of this article is Wisconsin Man Legally Named D's Nuts.
Oh, no.
Is arrested in domestic altercation.
Like his first name is D's and his last name is Nuts?
You got it.
Oh my gosh.
A Green Bay, Wisconsin man accused of using a deadly weapon along with misdemeanor battery and disorderly conduct has a very arresting name. Okay, so first
I feel
of all,
like he was born to be arrested with a name like that.
Yeah.
Like his parents knew, and he was definitely born in Wisconsin.
His parents did not name him that.
You think he changed his name?
Heck yeah.
I mean, what if his parents were just as silly?
I think it's hysterical that you think that his parents named him that.
Why? Parents name weird things all the time.
Uh-uh. No way.
Oh, this, yes. Aranjelo. Orange Jello.
His full name is D's Nuts Lee Kroll. Kroll legally changed his first name from Derek to D's Nuts in 2011, adding another E about 6 years later.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yes, I think it's hysterical that you thought his parents named him D's Nuts. This guy's crazy and probably on a lot of drugs and legally changed his
name.
Or
just maybe that enlightened.
What's funny about it is that he changed it from Derek to D's Nuts in 2011. And then they make a point to say that he added another E about 6 years later.
Oh, that's weird.
So he doubled down. It wasn't like he changed his name to D's Nuts.
Maybe people were calling him Dez and he didn't like that.
Oh. Dez Nuts.
Dez Nuts.
Got it. Yep, that's it. So he's
now
like
he's
6 years.
Nuts.
Yeah, 6 years later, he's like, I can't have this. People are calling me the wrong thing.
Dez.
I want you to call me D's Nuts.
Wow, what a boob.
Boob.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
All right, and we're back. So something that I want to talk about is this concept of one way or the other, right? Like we have patients, we have people out there that'll say, oh, you just change your diet and you're going to fix your cancer. Or, oh, no, you just do conventional treatment and that's your best chances to listen to your doctors and to do the treatment. And I think there's this whole middle ground of marrying both. And you and I were talking about that offline, and it's just being completely ignored. I mean, we have existing drugs that have been shown to be efficable with helping cancer patients. And we have, you know, vitamin deficiencies and we have nutritional issues. And it seems like it needs this comprehensive approach, but the system is just not built for that. And specifically, I want to get your opinion because something that we've been talking about a lot at Faith Through Fire and through this podcast is the difference between PhDs and MDs. So we have all these scientists and researchers who are uncovering really important research like cancer stem cells, like metabolic approaches, you know, all these things about halting the progression of cancer, caloric restriction, and all these things. And it's not being incorporated by and large by these oncologists and these MDs because it's not anything that they have long-term clinical trials on. And I wonder, you know, I want to talk a little bit about what you think about that, the fact that this isn't, that they're not marrying these two sides of research.
No, and that's the problem. And all of this research, and there's a huge ton of research, a lot of it's done. So you've got different stages of research, whether it's in vitro, which is just in cells, whether you have it in vivo, which is maybe in mice, and then in humans. And then you've got higher than that. So you've got these randomized clinical trials, which are seen by the oncologist to be the top of the pile. Actually, it isn't. What you need to look at is epidemiological studies. So you go back, you data mine, you look back through decades of research to see what these people. So some of these old drugs, for example, like statins, metformin, aspirin, you can look back and say, right, how did these people do? They were diagnosed with cancer back in 1970. Which of those people survived, kind of thing? So there are some countries that keep their data much better than others, and Denmark and Norway seem to be very good. But there are many different ways that you can actually get this information. And, you know, so data mining is a great way to look back and say, okay, let's look at all of these drugs that we used over these years and work out which ones have the best effects.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So you have two cancers at this point in your journey.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, all hands on deck. Like, I need to figure this out. What did you end up doing? What did you end up taking? How did you structure your treatment plan to where you are now cancer free? Because quite frankly, I mean, Jane, you're like a walking, breathing miracle. I mean, you're the success. You're the success. Yeah, you're the success story that everybody wants to have.
Absolutely. I'm coming up to my 25-year cancerversary, which I count from the date when I was diagnosed with stage 4 in 1999. I was in a bit of a mess with my two cancers and I was panicking. I knew that I had to go beyond where anybody else had gone because how was I going to get rid of it if I just did what everybody else did? You know, it's the sort of doing the same experiment, expecting the same result is, you know, madness. So I looked at a different approach. I thought, okay, let's try digging around and finding if there are any old drugs that work together. And I looked at the synergy of things as well. So I found information on lovastatin, which is a statin. And then I found information about a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. So I used a Todelac. And the combination of the non-steroidal and the statin was that they were five times better at killing cancer than on their own. So I thought, okay, great. Well, I need to get those two. And funnily enough, my oncologist back then prescribed those two, which was, you know, this is unusual. In these days, they wouldn't. They go by the recipe.
They didn't give you any pushback?
They do whatever's in the recipe book. Anything that's outside of the recipe book, they don't want to touch.
Which is something that we just talked about is that, you know, there's these protocols that they have to follow. Yeah. And so the idea of quote unquote practicing medicine or incorporating off-label drugs in cancer care is not readily done.
Well, I was very lucky in that she had started to look at statins. She didn't know which one to look at for cancer, but she knew that statins had this effect. And she was very much into gynae cancers, so breast cancer as well as cervical. And she knew that statins were very helpful, but she didn't know which ones to look at. So I came to her with this research and I said, look, this research shows that lovastatin plus a non-steroidal such as, and we were looking at Sulindac, we couldn't get hold of that. So she gave me Etodolac, which is a similar drug for arthritis. So I had the combination of those two. And then I found some more, I'd already found some more research on a drug called dipridamol. And this is an antiplatelet drug. Now, interestingly, dipridamol and statins synergistically work for many cancers. So, in particular, the fat-driven ones, and not just for mine, but for breast, prostate, colorectal. These, the combination of dipridamol and the statin seems to be particularly effective. There's research to show that. And so, adding all these drugs in, and I knew they worked synergistically. I then ended up with a cocktail. So instead of just working five times better, clearly it worked many times better than that, because 7 months after starting this cocktail, there was no trace of cancer in my body. So bingo.
7 months after you kind of come up with this cocktail, which you basically came up with doing your own research, and you went to all these different doctors to get them to kind of prescribe it to you. You put yourself on this. At this time, have you walked away from conventional treatment? Like your original oncologist who was trying to, you were like, I'm out.
They were threatening more chemo. Well, my Dr. Kenyon said, look, go and talk to your oncologist. She might put you back on chemo. I'm thinking, wow, that's what's caused the problem. I don't want any more chemo. Thank you very much. So I didn't actually discuss very much with her at this point. I thought, you know what, I'm just going to try and use these off-label drugs and see what happens.
I have a question, because I think just as a someone who's listening, and it can sound really overwhelming what you're doing, because many people don't have, or what you did really at the time, especially without the, you know, the resources like the internet. But what background do you have? Like, did you?
So I was trained as a physiotherapist, and I'd always a big interest in how the body functioned. I was a bit of a geek when it came to research.
That makes a lot more sense to Sarah and I, because we're like, you know, we're the same way. We love the research. We love diving in and seeing how things work synergistically and how, I mean, I would do the same thing. I would come up, my oncologist would hate me because I'd be coming up with my own cocktail and saying, I want to try it this way. But I think most people out there.
I've seen people's eyes glaze over when I start talking about some things. They're like, yeah, no.
No, most people, I think.
And
the medical community, too. I think they would say, ooh, that's dangerous, because if you're and actually, Sarah and I were talking about this, and I spoke a little bit about this with you, Jane, is that when we were doing research for this series on medical skepticism, and we put it out there to people like in these Facebook groups and things like that, like who says that they've cured their breast cancer, quote unquote, naturally? It was crickets. And it was really difficult to find people who had taken a different route and been successful at it. And I think that's why stage 4 patients get frustrated when people come to them and say, oh, have you tried this? Have you tried that? You need to do this. You need to do that. Because it's overwhelming, and the stories are there, but they're few and far between. And I think the medical community would say, for your average person, and then what happens is they might try a little bit of this, or they might try a little bit of that, or they might, so they dip a toe into these various things. They might clean up their diet for a little bit, and then they let that go. And then they might go over here and try some vitamin C infusions, and then they stop doing that. And it's very ad hoc, and then they don't get the result. And so
that's where understanding the cancer is really critical. How does it start? How does it progress? Where does it change from being a stem cell, a normal stem cell, to being a cancer stem cell? How does that cancer stem cell then give off all this progeny, all these daughter cells that are then fast dividing cells? They're the ones that get wiped out by chemo and radiotherapy, but the cancer stem cell, which is the root of the problem, how does that develop? And how can you stop the cancer stem cell? Because that's where you get the stage 4. That's where you get the metastases occurring, because we're not stopping the cancer stem cell. And that's critical. And that's where we need to be looking at the different cocktails. And the answer is always a cocktail. You cannot expect chemo to work on its own, radiotherapy to work on its own. You might be lucky in that you wipe out enough of the tumor and that your immune system isn't wiped out at the same time, that helps to overcome the cancer stem cell, assuming that you've got your inflammation under control, you've got other, your gut microbiome is under control. That it's a very complex picture. And this is what people don't understand. I've kind of broken down that I've tried in my book, what I've tried to do is systematically say, this is how it starts. This is how it starts to feed itself. All right. And stopping it from feeding. If you can view cancer as a parasite, parasites don't exist if they can't have food. Mm-hmm. Same as mice, they'll go away. If they can't have access, if creatures, whatever they are, and this applies to your cancer, and to be honest, a lot of microbes are involved very strongly. Many different microbes are involved very strongly in cancer. So if you starve your cancer, it won't progress. In fact, it'll go away. In fact, it will disappear.
In your book, How to Starve Cancer, do you talk about the cocktail that you use or what you suggest for patients to do?
So half of my book is my story. You'll find that interesting anyway. So just that's the easy read. The last half is more the science and trying to nitty gritty into sort of, you know, which pathways do you need to block?
Okay, let's go to our second sponsor. And then I want your final words for people listening, maybe words of hope, because I think that's what people are looking for. And you are a walking, breathing example of hope mixed with some good medical science. Yeah. So before we talk to you about that, let's hear from our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
All right, we are back. What words of hope do you have for our listeners today, Jane?
I just think that people need to realize that stage four is not a terminal diagnosis, all right? Doctors view stage four as being the last stage or, you know, the final stage. And they'll say, and if you ask, so once your cancer has spread from one organ to another place in your body, and not just lymph nodes is sort of seen as stage three, and that's advanced. But when you are, they normally expect stage three to progress to stage four. And when you're stage four, you need to realize that they don't have the answers right now. And the answers come from doing a cocktail of things that will actually block the cancer from feeding itself. And then you can stop some growth factors. You can turn the immune system back on. There are many different things that you can do. And there are drugs off-label. These are low toxicity drugs that will help every single step of the way. You know, from us talking earlier about mebendazole, but doxycycline, which is an antibiotic, really useful for blocking the ability of chemo to produce these lung mets. So the fact that chemotherapy, all these drugs, everything has side effects, downsides, and you've got to work out what those are. But I have an online course as well. And I think people, once they've read my book, if they want to delve into it and really understand things a lot more, I have a course on Teachable. It's not very expensive. It's $129 at the moment.
Where can they find you, Jane? Like, where can they find you and your offering and what you're doing now?
I have a website, howtostarvecancer.com. And really, a lot of my information, I've got about 90,000 followers in my Jane McClelland Off-Label Drugs for Cancer Facebook group. Bit of a long name. I'm sorry about that. So it's Jane McClelland, MCL McClelland, Off-Label Drugs for Cancer. And on that site, I have positive progress reports as well. So if they're looking for hope and they want to find people who've done well, just type in hashtag breast cancer or something and just have a look and positive progress, hashtag positive progress as well. And we have stories from every different type of cancer you can imagine.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Jane, for sharing your story and your experiences. We appreciate it so much.
Yes. Thank you for being with us today.
Until next time.
See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.